Welcome, everybody. I'm Steve Parker with Archer Energy Solutions, and we're back for another edition of Direct Connect. And today I am honored and humbled and pleased and throwing some other adjectives there, adverbs, whatever you want. Chris Blask, my brother from another mother, we've known each other for, a decade and a half now, probably.
At least,
don't see each other all that much, but we interact quite a bit online. And today our topic is going to be SBOMs. And the one thing I know about SBOM is it stands for Software Bill of Materials, not much else. Welcome, Chris. Why don't you give us a quick intro background on yourself? And then I'll throw out my first question to you after that is going to be, give us a quick definition of what an SBOM is and what's the elevator pitch for the technology?
Sure. So I'll cue all those up. So, you know, great to see you. Always happy to do these sort of things. And, you know, who I am. So I'm Chris Blask. I've been around for a long time. I actually happen to be wearing a Borderware shirt that I've kept around. The Borderware firewall server was my first bad idea in the early 90s, one of the early firewalls. And I ended up at Cisco running their firewall stuff and did a SIM startup with some friends. We sold to Cisco. And when you and I crossed paths was the ISACS phase of my career, the Information Sharing Analysis Center. You know, the SIMs had me thinking about that, monitoring and, you know, emergent awareness. And there was there was an industrial control system, ISAC, you know, which Sean McGurk and I started up and ran for a number of years with you, the EnergySec, you know, looking at this information sharing thing, which we're going to get to, it's the timing of this is very interesting. I'll get to that. But ISACs have always been on my mind. We're sharing information already. We've been through this already. You know, what is it new about SBOM, Software Bill of Materials, that we aren't already really dealing with the threat intelligence and so forth? So anyways, I went on from there and did, various things. For me, this started in 2019 when Mehdi Entezari and I was working at Unisys at the time, had an epic call where I just went on a rant about supply chain. You know, it's ridiculous. We can't figure out where we put anything. We can't tell anybody where anything is. And I just come from visiting Guyana with Tim Roxey, our mutual friend, who had hit $100 billion with oil, you know, had some cyber attacks, and we walked around the country looking at it, and I had to tell them, it's like, no one can tell you what's in any of this stuff. You know, can't, right? What version of software, firmware is inside any of this, you know, shiny new power grid equipment you're buying today? You know, there's no way for us to know, and that's not acceptable. So Mehdi and I came up with the Digital Bill of Material, which is dbomb.io. It's out there now. It's a Linux Foundation open source project. There's an attestation open source ecosystem. So you and I can stand up DBOM nodes, create a channel, and attest to each other about things like software bill of materials or threat intelligence or the time of day, whatever it is. And which led into, you know, focusing on SBOM that we'll spend the rest of the day talking about. But at that time, Alan Friedman, Josh Corman, and various other people in the federal government, specifically in the Department of Commerce, at the National Telecommunications Infrastructure Administration, NTIA, had a SBOM working group conversations going. And particularly in the healthcare space, there was a healthcare proof of concept. And there's some SBOM standards that were, you know, floating around. So all that was put together to prove this worked, leading to a presidential executive order that thou shalt SBOM, not at all unlike the 1990s executive order, thou shalt ISAC. And we'll get back to that. And that effort moved to the Department of Homeland Security. So in the meantime, I've been advising and now, you know, quite some time, Vice President of Strategy at Cybeats, that is an SBOM management platform vendor that's doing quite well. And working with the DHS and the community, I co-facilitated the SBOM sharing working group for a couple of years and published a couple of documents we can talk about. And now in that new phase, you know, there were five work streams on SBOM under DHS, under CISA, for a couple of years. That's now consolidated, matured to a spot where there's a weekly meeting and we're firing off tiger teams, you know, small groups to do specific tasks and come back and report. And just this week, we've got approval to make the ISACs as SBOM distributors group, you know, the first official tiger teams. We're going to, you know, run that for a couple months to see if we can figure those things out. And you had asked, I think as well, before I climbed on my soapbox, you know, the definition of an S-bomb. So standard sort of ways we have of talking about it today. An S-bomb is your list of ingredients on the side of a can of soup, right? And it's the analogy, of course, like all analogies, terrible, but it's also pretty good, right? You know, you don't really literally see everything on your Campbell's soup. You can see vegetable oil, but it may not tell you who's vegetable oil or whatnot. But if you had that relationship with Campbell's and said, hey, I really need to know where you're getting this vegetable oil, who touched it, they have those records somewhere, right? And S-bombs are similar, where we're saying, I made this piece of code, which includes this other piece of code, so I'll let you know what they are. And therefore, you can tell if you have a vulnerability that's just come up, or you can perhaps, you can do a lot of things. I don't want to get into that at the moment. We can tease that apart. So now we're at this spot where we've gotten past, a couple of years past, the federally driven thing. You know, we've got demonstrations. Cassie Crossley at Schneider Electric has been sort of leading the way as a vendor in this space, and she has a great book out now. And so we're getting to the use cases where we find out that you just save money. Or as you know, with cybersecurity and threat intelligence and everything else, if there's no budget for it, if it's expensive, if we can't pay for it, it's a different problem. But I think what we're getting to the era now where we're proving that doing things this way, you know, keeping transparency and clarity into where you put your code, you know, saves you a lot of time and money all the time and is really, really handy when things go bad.
Yeah, you mentioned the executive order. I believe that was 14028, if my notes are correct, back in May of 2021. It looks like there's quite a bit of support for SBOM in government. You mentioned, you know, a few agencies and other things that are going on there. You dive a little bit deeper. And I get the concept, right? The ingredient label and all of that. That makes a lot of sense. It actually reminds me of the infamous episode of Portlandia where they go out to eat and they ask for the background on the chicken that they're going to get served. They get the full biographical workup of this chicken with the name and where they were born and all that. And I don't know if we're going to get to that level with S-bombs, but maybe, who knows, right? Go deeper. What are the applications? What are the problems we're solving with S-bombs, and what do we want to solve?
Well, let me riff on your point, right? You know, so right now we're talking about vulnerabilities and do I have log4j in my code and is that in operations and deployment? Do I need to do something about that? So sort of standard cybersecurity inventory stuff. The National Manufacturing Institute of Scotland, NMIS, an interesting little organization, works with partners to my example I'm going to give here, Rolls-Royce and Boeing, right? So imagine that you are a flight engineer in some Air Force, you know, that buys Boeing airframes, and you're standing there looking into a turbofan, and you want to know what version of software was running on the radio plasma forge at the Rolls-Royce subcontractor in Scotland that made that one blade. And you want to know right now. And maybe, you know, if it was a crash and you're investigating it, you'll find that those records exist. It just takes 18 months and court orders and madness to get them. And NMIS was one of the launch partners in the DBOM Linux Foundation because of that. You know, that you know, they're looking down the path and saying, we need to tie all this information together. And if we zoom from that, you know, to your point, you know, I think that we are moving in the direction over the long term, where if you are an astronaut, if you're building a spaceship and you want to know who, you know, which pile of sand was shoveled into the furnace to make, you know, the silicon that the chip was made out of, that information could be available to you. For most of us, you know, don't care too much information. But when you need it, you know, that sort of system has to be made automated at some point over the next couple of decades for us to have, you know, Starship and all the other wonderful things that, you know, increasing complexity that we're building.
So you mentioned, so the information, and this is fascinating because the information exists, and I'm thinking how deep do you go, right? You say who was working on the code, where were they working on the code, and what did they have for lunch on the day they wrote that line of code? I theoretically, right, you can get there, and with computers doing the work, maybe it's beyond theoretically possible. That's fascinating. So S-bombs, conceptually, I think they're easy, right? It's a list, right? But how do they actually work? I know, can you educate me on this? How are they developed? Where are they developed? What's the technology behind that?
Sure. So there's as these things go, you know, if you think sticks and taxi and all that implies, you know, for those inside the loop, you know, it's not that different. So it turns out there's two formats, you know, two accepted formats that are standards out there. There's SPDX and there's Cyclone DX. And each, you know, there are camps that love one or the other. All of the tool vendors try to stay agnostic. We don't really care, you know, which one you come in, we'll convert to the other or whatnot. But yeah, in the executive order, it is a good example of a starting spot. You know, they're basically they're documents. It's like a Styx document in the threat intelligence world, right? You know, who, what, where, when, why, how, whatever. You know, a bunch of fields. You know, the initial Department of Commerce conversations got agreement on 8 fields. You know, and you know, where's this code came from? Who are you? You know, that sort of thing. And there's a lot more, you know, to that. Like any good format, you can say, well, what about this? What about that? And to give you some idea, you know, the Tiger team is being proposed at CISA right now include AI, right? You know, and just open that can of worms and imagine how many, you know, issues come up. What would I like to know about the data sets trained that an individual instance of AI in a container popped up in AWS? You know, what models of and data sets has it been trained on? So all of that information could be in the SBOM document itself, right? So SBOMs really are a sort of wonderful Pandora's box for all sorts of things. And as I mentioned in the sort of broader scope, we're, I think, just now moving into the, you know, let's look at how an SBOM combines with an IOC, an indicator of compromise, you know, a Styx document and a vulnerability document and a, you know, whatever it is. How do I take all these things and put them together in that use case, you know, for security purposes, you know? Do I have this? Is someone out there in the world exploiting it at the same time? Am I the kind of target? Do I have the symptoms? Blah, 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 blah. You know, how, you know, it's all about time. Again, this information will always exist, but can I put the information together fast enough to do anything about it?
And, you know, from a blue team perspective, that's great. From a red team perspective, attacking perspective, it could be equally valuable, right? Because now if they find a vulnerability, they say, where can I go exploit this? And get the SBOMs, the... Do you envision the SBOMs are going to be public or will they be private only for customers? Not that that matters necessarily, but.
Well, yeah, it matters like crazy. And this is where, you know, my ISAC home folks, ISAC, ISOs, EnergySec, information sharing, threat intelligence. You know, we have so many lessons from all going through all that, that the supply chain world, unless they have that, you know, not a lot of people in that world came from that space. So the same sort of questions like, well, oh, if I, you know, publish a vulnerability, doesn't it mean that, you know, I'm giving away all my intellectual property and my competitors get all my code and the bad guys get all my stuff? And as you know, we have evolved this conversation in the threat intelligence and the vulnerability sharing world well enough, you know, medium maturity, to be clear. We have a little ways to go, but these things combine and I think it's accelerating. But no, I mean, it depends. You know, if I write some code and I want to be really clear that this yes bomb for it, and I don't care who knows it, yeah, publish it open source. You know, GitHub, you know, publish it in the world, make sure everybody knows that's the real one. If I don't, if I, you know, you are my customer, you're one of my 17 customers, you're all huge and massively important to me, I want to give it to you or part of it, you know, a redacted version in escrow because our contract and lawyers require it, who knows? You know, so there's all that range. It you know, we as technology folks need to understand all those use cases and not just say, you know, these are always going to be secret or they're always going to be public, but it's how do we manage, like any other artifact of information, how do we manage access to that based on the actual use case?
Okay. So yeah, so like I said, probably all use cases would make sense in some way, shape, or form. And maybe a more detailed SBOM might be a little less public, but a high level one might be more public than things of that nature. Interesting. Light bulbs going off in my head as I kind of think through this. I don't think where to go next. I want to cover, you know, the who, what, when, why, where, how, all those words. What tools are available? I know you mentioned you work with Cybeats, which is one of the tool manufacturers. So what types of tools are available? How are they used? What are the applications of this that currently in the marketplace?
Sure. So there's SBOM generation tools, you know, and that's a fairly baked segment now. There's lots of, you know, commercial and open source ways to make an SBOM. So if you're a coder or you're compiling other people's code or whatever, you find yourself wanting to make an SBOM, there's tooling for that. There's software composition analysis, our good old SEA friends, Black Duck and tools like that. If you're looking at a binary and trying to back your way into, what it's actually made of, those vendors and those tooling sets, will also be able to make an SBOM for you. And just in that SBOM generation space, it's interesting to stop right there, because again, this is something I think my threat intelligence folks understand better than the supply chain folks, is which is the real SBOM? Is it real because I made the software and I made the SBOM and therefore that's the real one? But if you do some sort of analysis and create another one, it's a fake one? Or am I perhaps an untrustworthy, author? And I made the software. I did make the software, but you don't trust my SBOM, and somebody else made a better SBOM than me. What is real, right? So we have to account for all that. And, so Sybeats, I'll ring that, bell. And frankly, the company's done really well. It's a classic tiny little startup, started in Toronto, Canada. Dmitry Radman, is the genius behind it. And, just as crazy as Silicon Valley startup story as you could ever want. But, we can say Schneider Electric out loud. They were our flagship customer. We build the management, this SBOM management layer. So that pane of glass dashboard, not that I'm making SBOMs, and now that I have them, what the heck do I do with them? Right. And so inside our platform and our competitors and so forth, in that segment, you can unfold your code really quickly. The Stuxnet of supply chain, do I have live 4J? If so, where? And of all the things, what are the characteristics of the pieces that I care about? And I'll tell you, you and I have been around for a while. As I've been through this cycle multiple times, right? Early in the stage, you're trying to figure out what's important, what isn't. But what really sticks with me is, and again, this is a Sybeats gets props for this, but again, companies aren't space. This is sort of what you get. When I first saw the user interface, I thought Windows Explorer, which sounds silly today. But if you were around in the late 1980s and you saw Windows Explorer and File Explorer, and you could just click, 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 and open up all these directories and see where everything was and sort it. And I'm a command line commando, but that changed the world. And it's that sort of thing in the management layer where you have all this code all over the place and the information is there and you could eventually figure it out. But how? So there's a whole management layer, set of vendors and services to, now that I have SBOMs, what do I do with them, right?
Yeah, having the so even as a customer, let's say you're a Schneider a customer, you might not know what an SBOM is, you might not care, you might not have any tools or whatnot. You're still getting value from this because now when something happens, your vendor is better prepared to deal with it, if I'm hearing correctly.
Right, and again, I'm not saying, and I wouldn't say anything out of class, this is all Cassie and Schneider are all very public with this, when Lib4j hit, they were, because they were one of the early adopters, they weren't impacted that much, and they saved a lot of money, and they figured it out really quick. And everybody else figured it out in the end, too, but it just, they're sending emails to all their most expensive people and getting them on calls like this and creating spreadsheets instead of having thought this through. So that's, the value in incident response to supply chain issues is just baked in. I think that's generally, and I've never liked the risk calculation on economics. If something bad happens, it'll cost you X, therefore spend Y, and Y is less than X. However, that's just seems to be a given. You don't want to be caught in a bad moment. And neither of us said CrowdStrike out loud yet. Is that, has it been long enough? Is it too soon?
Yeah, you can say CrowdStrike. Yeah, do we have an SBOM for CrowdStrike?
Let me just say, I expect that they're pretty good at, they're getting there, right? And everybody's just getting there. The analogy to threat intelligence and the state of maturity of threat intelligence adoption, is always in my mind, right? I thought 15, 20 years ago that we'd be farther ahead with threat intelligence today than we are. However, I think we've come a long, long way. And I think there's a confluence, ICS ISAC, right? That's back when you and I were talking a lot. Remember Sarah, the situational awareness reference architecture, know who you are, what you have, what it's doing, and what's going on around you. And the who you are stuff, we're still not good at, leave that alone for a second, but what do you have inventory? You know, what's it doing in OT, OT monitoring, Dragos, and, you know, Security Matters and everybody else. You got that pretty good. What's going on around you, threat intelligence, but the, what you have, you know, what code is actually in my PLCs? You know, what, where's the software, you know, that's actually touching my energy systems? You know, this is addressing that.
Interested in your perspective of who's using this. And I know, you know, I do most of my work in the electric sector, as you know. Southern Company, I believe, presented, or representative from Southern Company presented at S4 this year. I was not there. I think you might have been, but can you give other examples of how, well, the end customers are using this in their environments? What are some of the applications? What benefits you're seeing from it?
Sure. A really good question. And, you know, very timely as well, right? You know, so this is, you know, let me just bring up the government and regulations and so forth, because that's always a, you know, very contentious thing in our world, regulations at all, right? You know, why force us to do things? Are they necessary? Whatnot? You know, and that was a chunk of the driver, right? You know, personally, I think that's where governments are kind of handy, right? You know, sometimes you have to say everybody has to, you know, you can't be this high, you know, can't get on the ride unless you get that tall. But as I'm saying, the practical value as a vendor, you know, that's been demonstrated out the wazoo. And this, so in SBOM terms, in taxonomy, there's a couple of different actors. You know, there's an SBOM author who may be the software author. There's the SBOM consumer who may be the software consumer. And in the CISA SBOM sharing working group, one of the documents one of our subteams produced was a SBOM sharing roles and considerations. And in that document, we define three actors. So there's an SBOM author, there's an SBOM consumer, but there's also an SBOM distributor. And that could be you. It could be EnergySec, could be anybody, right? And so now, you know, this healthcare ISAC, or the ISAC as a SBOM distributor tiger team that we're just starting tomorrow, get the first meeting on that, we'll be thinking that through and analyzing, you know, maybe we're wrong in the last work group. Maybe there is no such thing as an SBOM distributor. If there is, as we all seem to think, you know, then an ISAC is a perfect example. You know, you're in the middle. You're neither the author or the consumer. What does it you do with it? And if you think in the, you know, it, like, as you say, in the energy sector, in your, especially in healthcare and auto and everything else, you know, an ISAC, ISAO, sharing organization, whatever it is this wonderful little example of the ecosystem. And healthcare, because, you know, for a lot of reasons, you know, healthcare is sort of advanced on this, you know, more than many sectors, but you have, you know, health delivery operators, you know, the HDOs, you know, the Mayo Clinic and Presbyterian Health, and, you know, small and large all over the country and all over the world. And you have all the people who make all the medical devices, right? So this, the vendor end of the vendor's side of the SBOM equation is just, as I say, I think it's just done to death. If you're a vendor, significantly, you know, all the OT vendors are going down that path, right? You know, in our shared space there. Consumers, a little less sure what they're doing with them writ large, right? You know, we all have a lot of advanced theories in this. There is some of this actually in action, but the mass consumption and application of SBOM by end users of products, you know, is something that is just beginning to happen now, right? So one I like, and again, I can share this. This is a public, so I can share this one, you know, but the National Grid, you know, they about a year ago started, you know, not requiring, but strongly requesting SBOMs from, you know, potential vendors, because they want to take an SBOM, and because they pen test every product, you know, they put in IT or OT before it deploys anywhere. You know, great, rigorous structure, good folks there doing that. And they found that if they have the SBOM for the product, it's way faster and cheaper and better, mm-hmm. right? So it's basically documentation for, you know, if you're validating products for deployment in a grid, which you should be doing. If you're not doing that, do that. And yeah, having that level of documentation on the code that's in the device that you're using saves you an awful lot of time. It helps you, you know, clarify the results of your investigations, your testing. And then, let me just throw in there, I think the one of my favorite personal findings of all this is when the healthcare proof of concept folks were reading out to our friends in the energy sector, the energy sector SBOM POC conversations, and they're reading out the results of the healthcare POC. And a gentleman from Siemens, you know, was part of that, and he was saying, we've got found these values. And, you know, as we do, you sort of, you list out your bullet list and you're thinking contemporaneously. And it was just a very, very honest statement. And he said, mostly what we found is we had better customer relations, right? Because if you're an energy operator and you're consuming, you know, products, you know, you trust your vendors, you have to. However, you know, better documentation, better clarity, better communications, you know, shorten the you know, communications loop is just good for business from the vendor perspective. And obviously it's handy for the consumer.
As you know, I operate in the regulatory space, been dealing with NERC-CIP for years and years. And there's nothing in NERC-CIP currently around SBOMs. There are supply chain risk management requirements. They don't specifically call it SBOM. You mentioned the executive order, which does. Are there regulations that you see coming on either the vendor side or the consumer side related to SBOMs?
I mean, the short answer is yes. I will always regretfully accept regulation when we can't get there through, you know, our Brownian motion in the private sector. But some of it's sort of implicit stuff. Like when you and I have done, you know, crosswalk analysis of regulations, you know, all of our lives, and you can read, NERC-CIP 13. I love it. I love the wording of it. Right. It's nicely ambiguous, you know, as opposed to the other 12. And it leaves you thinking, what is diligence? You know, what do I actually need to be paying attention to? So in the FDA, you know, in the federal space, you know, in that regulatory environment, the FDA, you know, for lots of obvious reasons, is sort of, you know, leading the way, you know, with quote unquote SBOM, quote unquote regulations. But I'd say safe to say that if you want to work in the healthcare space and you don't want to go down that path, find a different path. In Europe, you know, this is getting baked into policies. So I'd rather say policy than regulations. Regulation is such a forceful thing. You know, sometimes industries, you know, and, you know, companies can regulate between them. If you're a massive vendor and you say, you know, you're not our supplier unless you do these things, it becomes a de facto regulation. So it's really just a matter of policy. You know, at what point does policy become diligent? At what point, you know, does what policy become mandatory? You know, whether you're going to be blocked from sales by the government or your customers. And this is really, you know, this is the forcing function. I always love the economic drivers. You know, when everybody, call out, you know, Stuart Phillips, you know, Stu Phillips, right? And he and I at Cisco at the turn of the century, he baked the best sales narrative for anything I've ever heard. And I still to this day, you know, always look to him for this sort of thing. Because in the late 90s, we were selling firewalls by saying our encryption and our features are better than the other person's encryption. And he wrote this deck of slides that I carry with me to this day, you know, to train the Cisco field and channels. And he said, you know, no one cares how digital certificates are revoked. What you say is, if you're on the internet and you have a firewall, you can, this is literally an example from back in those days, which today is sort of fascinating. And you have VPNs, you have remote workers, you know, who cost less, work more, make you more profitable, productive, and competitive. So if you don't want to buy our stuff, you don't want to go down this path now, that's fine. In 3 to 5 years, when your competitor buys you because they outcompeted you in the marketplace, you know, then you'll start too. And I think this is becoming one of those things. You know, you just hear these contemporaneous sort of comments from consumers. It's like, yeah, I'm starting to, you know, when I'm looking at products and they say, no, I'm not going to give you an SBOM, I'm like, yeah, okay, thanks. And you walk next door. You know, are you really going to make me feel a little better that you, A, know what's in the product you're selling me anyways, and then I can count on you to communicate with me as appropriate.
Market pressure is a thing and it does work. It doesn't work on every topic, but it definitely is a thing. So interesting conversation. I have a couple last questions for you. First of all, for those who might be interested in learning more about SBOMs or keeping abreast of what's going on, what's the best way to connect? Who should they be following? How should they connect? Where can they go to plug in and get more information?
CISA.gov, CISA.gov/SBOM is a good spot. I've frankly spending a lot of the majority of my industry effort, you know, there, because, you know, a lot is getting developed there and propagating out. But if you're part of any, you know, cyber or cybersecurity communities like OWASP or IEEE or anything, you'll probably, you know, find SBOM communities going on there, you know, that may have more specific, more, you know, close to your world thoughts on this, and kind of everything in between. At all of the, you know, the RSA thermometer, you know, I found interesting over the last 3 years. There's, you know, 3 year and threat intelligence and everything else, you go through these cycles. Maybe you no doubt remember the RSA, where threat intelligence was the big banner everywhere. And there was the year before that and the year after that, right? The conferences, you know, any conference series you're involved with, and I'm thinking more and more, I'm seeing them so often that almost into any industry or organization you're part of probably has a track on that you can plug into.
All right. My final question, I'll give you an opportunity to do something that I know you love to do, like vision the future and make predictions. So what do you think the future looks like for SBOM? And give us a prediction or two on where do you think this is going to go over the next year, or half decade or so?
Right. So, you know, let me explain for everybody. Inevitability curves is something that a term that I came up with in the early 90s when I was trying to convince my boss, you know, where we came up with BorderWare, that everyone on Earth is going to get on the internet. And I finally decided, assume I'm right, there's a line connecting today to that with bumps, and we need to pay attention to those because that's where the business is. You know, and you frame that well, because there's short-term, medium-term, long-term. I'll take a long-term out of the top. You know, that D-bomb, National Manufacturing Institute of Scotland example, we will get there. And there's no choice. This is absolutely baked in. That could be as much as 20 years from now, you know, where you can pick up anything and see your digital bill of materials, you know, the attestations you have a right to know about. I, as a purchaser of this phone, we'll see one set of them right this moment. If I bought a million of these and I'm the U.S. federal government and I'm using them for, you know, military operations, I see a different set of things, but you'll see that right away. And that's it just based on sheer efficiency. You know, we have to get to the point where we can automate access to all that information and the intellectual property. Let me throw that into that curve. Similar sort of time frame. I think the next 10 years will get very interesting in intellectual property, because as I've gone through threat intelligence and now supply chain, what I really find is that everybody does intellectual property security and confidentiality terribly. You know, we sign a contract between two companies. We mostly kind of tell our employees what we expect them to protect and not, and they kind of try to keep that in mind more or less as they're talking to the people they're working with. You know, there is no trail. You know, where is your intellectual property? So I think in this process, you know, we'll put in systems in place that address concerns about intellectual property. You know, can actually tell where my information is going as opposed to just faxing it to the bloody world. Taking the much, much shorter term, right? As I say, I think everybody is an SBOM distributor at the end of the day. If you are a vendor, you're still consuming things from others. You know, you still have upstream supply chain people. And if you're an ISAC, or if you're a system integrator, if you're a contractor, you know, you're in the middle. And I think between now and the end of next year, we'll get a much better understanding of when you find yourself in the middle, what you need to do. And that's where this ISACs, again, EnergySec, you know, organizations that are specifically there to share information about cybersecurity, by the end of next year, we'll have a much better idea of, you know, what to do if somebody asked them for an SBOM, how they would handle that, what issues they need to be concerned with, and what are the mechanisms. I think in a similar time frame, the consumers, you know, the from the vendor perspective, this is done. Consumers, if you are really at the leading edge, you know, your criticality, or, you know, you just have the right people in charge who are plugged in, you're already going down that path. A year and a half from now, just in the energy sector, every significant grid operator and people in their supply chain so the utilities. I've always thought that NRECA and APPA and organizations like that might become distributors for their, you know, the large number of electric utilities out there. But the big players as consumers of SBOM, consumers of technologies, by the end of next year, they'll be deep into using and operationalizing that, all of them. Yeah, many of them already are.
So as you know, everything lives forever on the internet. So we'll come back in 5 or 10 years and see if you're right or wrong on your prediction. I'm sure no one's ever, you've never been wrong, maybe occasionally, but big thanks for joining us. I'm glad you're able to make this work. And you know, I obviously follow you on social media and hear a lot about SBOMs through that, but it's nice to actually sit down with you virtually and chat for 30 minutes or so and get a little more details on something that I have an interest in, but certainly not an expertise. So big, big thank you, Chris. Any final words?
Only that, should, as I think you know, this is our house in Ontario, Canada, the summer place. And I've got these solar powered electric Starlink boats down in Florida for the winter. And you are more than welcome to, we'd love to have you out there or here anytime we're crossing paths.
I'll look forward to an opportunity to do that. So thank you. Thank you, Chris Plask. I'm Steve Parker. This has been another edition of Direct Connect with Archer. Hopefully y'all got some good information from this, and we'll be diving in deeper on SBOMs. It's coming your way, whether you like it or not. So take care, everybody. We'll see you later on.
Not only is Direct Connect available to listen to, you can also watch each episode on our YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com/@ArcherU. If you're interested in who we are and what we do, you can head on over to our website at archerint.com. You can also follow us on our social media platforms, Archer International on Facebook, Archer Energy Solutions LLC on LinkedIn, and @ArcherSEC on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and check back every other week for brand new episodes of Direct Connect.